Good morning. How is everybody today? Hopefully it'll be warming up a little bit. We got whatever was going wrong figured out, so thank you to Sam Clark and for others climbing up in the rafters and figuring out why it was so cold in here. So, if I could summarize the book of Proverbs in one line, it would be this. It is, how do we have the truly good life? That's what Proverbs is really all about. It's a group of sages writing to a group of people and talking with their students about what the good life truly means. And so they give advice on everything from how to stay pure within your marriage and within your relationships to advice on child rearing. And let me tell you that that's advice that I desperately need to hear. I have a 2.5-year-old who is very 2.5, as many of you know. Who loves to run, as we found out last week during service, as she escaped. And so life is always an adventure. And life's about to become even more of an adventure because my wife and I are pregnant. We couldn't think of a good way of telling you, so this is our way of telling you. So we are going to double the amount of children and quintuple the amount of craziness in our household come sometime in July. So life is exciting. So that's my challenge to all these young families who had children right after us. It's your time again now too, as well. But advice on how to live and how to love. And we're especially needing advice with Hannah in one area right now, because Hannah recently became interested in, as she calls them, monies. I love that. Pennies and nickels and dimes and quarters. And she knows that they can buy things and be used to get the things that we need and want. And so a few weeks ago, Megan and I gave Hannah a couple of coins to put in the plate during church because we wanted to teach her and to help her learn how to give. And as the plate came along, I looked over and I watched her as she grasped those monies even more tightly in her hand. And as the plate came to us, she stuck out her lower lip and she said, "No, I want to keep them." And children just say the things that we're already thinking in our own heads because they don't have filters. And it's the appropriate, is this the appropriate time, we have to wonder as I'm holding that collection plate, to have an ethical discussion about why it is that we give in church? Is this the right teaching moment? Is it worth the fight to hold up everything and to not pass the plate in order to force her to give her monies? And so we need to figure out how we teach Hannah about things like money and giving. And I have no idea what that means yet, whether that's going to be a small allowance and having her figure out how much money to set aside for church and all these things. And so we would really love some advice and wisdom as it comes to that. But we do know that we want Hannah to have wisdom when it comes to money and good financial habits and charitable giving. Because parents have an enormous impact on their children's understanding of money. From saving versus spending habits, scrimping or struggling, parents often determine the way that their children think about, save, and use money in the present and throughout their lives. Rachel Cruz is the daughter of Dave Ramsey and the author of a book entitled Smart Money, Smart Kids, and she states this, "I truly believe more is caught than is taught. That what your kids see you doing is far more powerful than what they hear you say. Words can be strong, but actions are stronger." And so if we want our children to have wisdom when it comes to finances and to money, it requires us to both talk about our financial habits and also to demonstrate them to our children. And our children will often respond to the ways in which their parents use money. For example, your example has an enormous impact. Now, they might imitate your habits, or they might completely rebel against them and do something totally opposite, but more is caught than is taught. Research has shown that if parents are overly frugal, never spending on something that they need or want, then children often go to extreme circumstances and buy everything that they ever felt like they were lacking as they get older. But it also goes to the other extreme. If parents were always overspending on lavish gifts and lifestyles, the newest cars and gear and gadgets, and never taught their children how to plan for those purchases, then their children would often feel entitled to the same lifestyle without having sent the same form of income. It's something they grow to expect as they get older. And if parents emphasize charitable giving to their children, And if they turn their attention towards helping others with the things that they have, then their children often take notice too. They become cheerful givers. In fact, many of them then complain later in life that they find it just too hard to not help people with the things that they have. We teach others about money through our actions, but we also teach our children about money through our words. True conversations about things like budgets and giving and debt and savings. But to be fair, talking about money can be pretty difficult, can it? I mean, I feel uncomfortable talking about it in the pulpit right now, and none of you people have any idea what my budget is. Because it's tough to talk about money, whether it's things like asking for a raise or talking about our finances or looking at retirement or discussing options for paying for college or sharing monetary struggles or a whole host of other reasons. Talking about money fills many of us with apprehension and even dread. And I think that's because of what this thing right here represents to us. For many of us, money is, well, it's security. The more money that we have in our account, the greater the total of our portfolio, the bigger the bottom line, then the more we feel like we can have control over our circumstances and our future. It helps us to feel secure because we can plan ahead. We can dream and desire about the way that we want things to be. It makes us feel secure in our prospects. So money represents security, and it also represents possibilities. It's the power to buy and to have and to possess. It allows us to have the things that we need to survive, but it also allows us to have some of the things that we want to have. And the more money that we have, the more toys that we can afford, and money gives us access to, well, the good life, as many people would define it. So money is about security, money is about possibilities, but in a way it really all boils down to power. With money, we have power. We can trust in our wealth to give us power over our circumstances, over the chaos of life, over a lack of control. The more money we have, the more power that we can have. And the back of the U.S. dollar bill makes a statement to us. If you ever look, it says, "In God we trust." But if we're honest with ourselves, many of us trust more in the bill that is in our hand than on the God whose name is printed on the back of that bill. And that's why we really must take Jesus' words to heart when he states, "You cannot serve both God and money." And whenever he says, "For where your treasure is, where your wealth is, there your heart is also." And as we come to Proverbs 3 in the section that Al read for us this morning, we encounter a one-sided conversation about money taking place between a parent and a child. Now, it might not seem apparent at the beginning, but that is part of what this discussion is about. And as we discovered last week, Proverbs 1 through 9 is a series of 10 discourses or conversations between a father figure and his son or his children. And whether this is actually a parent talking to his own offspring, or a sage who is talking to his students like they are his children, we simply don't know, and nor does it really matter. But it is an authority figure who is trying to get the attention of his or her audience and impart wisdom and knowledge to them. And of these 10 discourses, 4 are simply just trying to get the listener's attention. And so the sage says things like, "Pay attention," or "Listen to my words," or "Heed my teaching." Or as the sage says here, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart." And here the sage is trying to say, if you want to be truly wise, if you want to have the favor of God and people, if you want to truly attain the good life, then here's the way you should live and act and be. And so the sage gives his son something to which he could aspire, in which he says this, "Trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil." And these verbs should make us take pause. Trust in the Lord. Submit to him. Fear the Lord, and as a result of that fear that you have, or that awe, that respect, then shun evil. Trust, submit, fear, shun. And this is a very easy thing for us to command. It's very easy for me to tell you, trust. But it's a very difficult thing for us to give trust or to obtain trust. Because when we give our trust to something, it requires us to take our confidence out of ourselves and put it in someone else. Now we've put ourselves in someone else's hands as we learn to trust. It requires us to surrender control to someone else or something else, to give up power to another. And here it's why this child, this listener, is called to submit to the Lord. Because you're no longer in control when you do that. Trust is a key term in the book of Proverbs. For the writers of Proverbs, if you are truly wise, the book of Proverbs then challenges you to discover the things in which you put your trust. Let me just give you a few examples. Trust in the book of Proverbs. 11:28, those who trust in their riches will fail, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Or Proverbs 28, the greedy stir up conflict, but those who trust in the Lord will prosper. Those who trust in themselves are fools, but those who walk in wisdom are kept safe. Or Proverbs 29, fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord will be kept safe. Or Proverbs 23, verse 4, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust in your own cleverness. Or Proverbs 16:20, whoever gives heed to instruction prospers, and blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord. Time and time again, the sage reminds us that the things in which we trust prove whether or not we are wise. If we trust in ourselves and in our own power, or if we trust solely in others and in their wisdom and might, or if we trust in our wealth and our riches and the things that we can find in our wallet, we're ultimately doomed to failure. Those who are wise are those who trust in the Lord and hold Him in awe and reverence in their lives. But if we're going to trust in God, then it needs to be wholeheartedly. The sage says, trust in the Lord with all of your heart. This implies a total and complete surrender of the self in every way and in every facet of life. And for the sage, a huge part of this wholehearted trust comes down to our wallets. Are we willing to trust God with our wealth? Do we trust in God's care and provision? Do we believe that God is trustworthy and keeps His promises? In essence, the question is, how big is our trust? Look at verses 9 through 10 of Proverbs 10 with, or excuse me, Proverbs 3 with me, where here the writer says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all of your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. By using this term, first fruits, the sage is appealing to Hebrew tradition as he talks about giving and honoring God. You see, the Hebrew calendar and the Hebrew life was built around a series of religious feasts and festivals, a time of remembrance. There were three festivals that were considered the highest, and in which the men especially, but anyone who wanted to come, were encouraged to go to the temple. And those three feasts were Passover, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Booths. And two of those three festivals were times of harvest. One was celebrated in the late spring, and one was celebrated in the late fall. And as the people were gathering in their crops, they were challenged to present the first fruits of their fields and their vineyards to the Lord. And in fact, those two festivals are often just referred to in the Old Testament as the Day of First Fruits. And according to Deuteronomy chapter 26, that celebration was meant to be a reminder of God's goodness and faithfulness to His people throughout history. These were the words they were asked to bring to God as they bring their offering to the temple. They were told to say this, I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the land the Lord swore to our ancestors to give us. My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians mistreated us and made us suffer, subjecting us to harsh labor. But then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our ancestors, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, toil, and oppression. So the Lord brought us up out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and with signs and wonders. He, the Lord, brought us to this place, and he gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of that soil to you, Lord, that you have given me. And they were then to place the basket before the Lord your God and bow down before him. And then you and the Levites and the foreigners residing among you shall all rejoice in the good things the Lord your God has given to you and to your household. Those are beautiful words of both history and words of trust. Because first fruits was a reminder of the goodness of God, both in their past history and in their present reality. And it served to remind them that God continues to provide for their needs, bringing rain for the crops and good for all of the people. But trust means letting go, and letting go of our false notion of being in control. It means giving God all of our allegiance and our loyalty and saying to God, God, your will be done in my life with my actions and my abilities and my dreams and my desires and even my finances. I give it all to you. Do with it what you will. And that trust isn't meant to be a form of investment. It's not like if you give God these things, then you're forcing his hand to give you greater abundance by just giving him the first fruits of your field. It does say that God is going to provide for you and help your barns and vats overflow, but really that's talking about providing a promise of God's provision for the needs of his people to take care of what they need. Instead, first fruits is meant to be an act of worship and a statement of trust. This offering was a way of giving thanks to the Lord and also placing their trust in God's ongoing goodness. Because there are times in my own life in which I hold on to my monies really tightly. I want to keep them for myself. You see, I trust in God, right? I get up here and I preach it every Sunday, but I also want to keep a little bit of power for myself. God, I trust that you're good and you're going to take care of me. But I'm just going to make sure. I'm grasping the money, but I'm really trying to hold tightly to my dream of being in control. And holding on tightly means, ultimately, I'm living selfishly. I'm only thinking about what I want. But in the Old Testament Torah, first fruits was also tied to the idea of taking care of others. They referred to this as this giving as the sacred portion that was set aside for the well-being of others. It's why the Levites and even the aliens and foreigners living in their land rejoiced at their giving. Because it then goes on to say, when you have finished setting aside a tenth of all your produce, the year of the tithe, you shall give it to the Levite, the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. And the sage here in Proverbs 3 makes a similar statement later on in a section we didn't read this morning, but if you jump down to verse 27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act. Do not say to your neighbor, come back tomorrow and I'll give it to you, when you already have it with you. Do not plot harm against your neighbor who lives trustfully near you. In other words, he's saying, use your wealth, use the things that you have, whatever that means, to be a blessing to other people. And when you have the power to act, then act in whatever way that you can. Each Christmas, my family has a tradition of watching the movie It's a Wonderful Life. And I've probably seen that movie at least 50 times in my lifetime since then, because sometimes we watch it two or three times within a Christmas season. But I noticed something new the last time that we watched it. Most of you know the story, and if you don't, it's been out forever. Go watch it. But there's a scene in which George has just gotten married. They're leaving town. They see that there's a run on the bank, and he stops by the building and loan, and he goes in to find out that they've shut the doors because they don't have enough money to cover the bills of the people who are showing up. And George walks into the office, and he stands underneath his father's picture trying to figure out what he's going to do. And the thing I'd never noticed before is the little plaque underneath George's father. It says this, the only thing you can take with you, the only thing you can take with you is that which you've already given away. And he walks back out. And they spend all the money they had set aside for their honeymoon to take care of the people who walked in the door. And so, as followers of Jesus, we're called to give away, to use our money to bless others, to do good in their lives. The writer James in the New Testament picks up on the same wisdom tradition when he says that true religion is taking care of the needs of the people who live among you, the helpless, the aliens, the orphans, and the widows. The wisdom of the world tells us to keep for ourselves and hoard up more and more, and sure, use some of your wealth from time to time to help others, but really you can only trust in yourself. So put yourself first always. But the wisdom of God says that that we have to recognize the providence of God, that we give Him the first fruits of our labor, because God is the one who has given us the ability to do the work in the first place. And we're called to help others in times of distress through the work that we do. And that's why on Sunday mornings we pass the collection plate and you give, whether it's in the collection plate or online through our online giving, because our contribution goes to work in ways that God has called us to work. It works in places like Impact, blessing people here in the city of Houston with their needs. And these cans that you see up here are a way in which we have given, as we have over 1,000 food items up here that can be given to people who are needed, who need it through Impact this week. Our contribution helps take the gospel to places like the campus of the University of Houston. It blesses homeless people from off the street who come in needing food or a physical or a coat to keep warm. When we give here, our money then goes to bless the people around us, and it proves that we are going to trust God to take care of us as we take care of other people. If we trust in God with all of our heart, then He gives us wisdom. And as the sage says here in Proverbs 3, that wisdom is a blessing and a wealth that is beyond measure, more precious than ruby or gold or silver. Nothing compares to her. God's wisdom provides blessing and true profit. It's more valuable than the greatest jewels, and it brings true life to those who possess it. And so may we learn to let go of our grasping at our monies or these things in which we think give us meaning in the good life. And may we learn to trust in the Lord. It's hard. It's easy to talk about trust. It's very hard to give trust. And yet what God wants is for us to trust in His goodness and His grace and His mercy. And He demonstrated that to us by sending Jesus to live among us, to die for us, to defeat sin and death and evil, to be raised to new life, to fulfill the promise that we have life if we trust in the wisdom and the goodness of God. We're going to offer a time of invitation. If there's a way that we can bless you this morning, anything we can pray for, any way that we can help, or if you want to rejoice over something great that has happened this week, or if you need us to mourn alongside of you, anything that we can do, we want to offer that invitation. If you want to give your life to Christ, we would love to help you do that through hearing your confession of faith and baptizing you in His name, or any way that we can bless you this morning. We're going to sing this song. If there's any way we can help, come to the front.